Welcome to the latest series of the Women Who Sport podcast. This series is made possible by the support of Boob Armour, who make protective inserts that fit inside a sports bra and protect breast tissue while training or competing. The inserts are lightweight, comfortable and suitable for all sporting activity. Check them out at www.boobarmour.au or through the links on the Women Who Sport social media channels. We're incredibly lucky to be working with a company that are leading the way with the protective equipment offered to female athletes, giving everyone the confidence to participate in sport.
Today's episode, we're joined by Ruth Mwandumba. She's a Scouse that hails from Waterloo, and she's challenging shooting stereotypes and targeting change in the sport of shooting. England's first ever Black Rifle shooting champion, achieving that unprecedented feat in 2018 and repeating it in 2022. We're super excited to get to know Ruth. We've never had a shooter on the pod, so we're excited to get to know a little bit more about the sport and her journey in particular.
Yes, absolutely. Love this conversation with Ruth. And she spoke to us a day before flying out for the World Cup. So she is a very cool lady. We really appreciate her time. And we wish her all the best competing this week.
Okay, highs and lows of the week. Now, I feel like we both got similar ones. We'll start with the low.
Yes.
It's kind of like a positive low anyway. So Catherine Brunt, your old landlord.
My old landlord.
Has announced her retirement from international cricket. Now, obviously, we wish her all the best in the next chapter, and we all know that an endpoint in everyone's career is inevitable, but she's been such a servant to English cricket, done so much, achieved so much. I guess it'll be sad to see her go, and, like, who will actually replace her?
We've had to see Hunter, Catherine Brunt, like, Sarah Barrington. I think, actually, now, like, we're seeing these people as absolute legends, and their legacy will live on, and it's so cool actually that women's sport now has those power figures that we can look up to and reflect on.
Exactly. No, completely agree. Okay, high of the week then.
So high of the week for me was, so not all the details have been released, but the Premier 15s in England is moving from being controlled by RFU to being controlled more by the clubs. And I think in terms of the sustainability of the professional game, in terms of more women having the opportunity to be professional, that is going to be huge. And at the moment right now in women's rugby, you're only professional really if you're contacted by your union. So there's 28 girls in Scotland that applies to, plus a couple sevens girls. Basically, it's still a very elitist opportunity. Whereas if the clubs are the ones that start doing the contract in long term, then that could be absolutely huge for what being a professional rugby player looks like. Because right now it only looks like something that's accessible to those competing at the very top international level.
Yeah, no, completely. And I think in a few years down the line, hopefully women's club teams start training in the day and it means you've got the evenings off. And actually that might be far more conducive to females wanting a family too, because they can go train and play whilst their children are at school, for example, or nursery or daycare, rather than it being in the evening and it making quite difficult to balance everything. So no, that's a really good one.
Bonds, okay. What have you got?
Sticking with team sports, we've got first domestic women's football match to sell out at Wembley, FA Cup final next weekend. To sell out Wembley, that is huge.
Incredible.
Like, imagine playing in that. That's amazing.
Are you going to go, Bonds? You've become a football super
I have
fan.
A football super fan. Actually, I would love to, but it's sold out. However,
low of the week. Bonds can't get tickets for games anymore.
So anyone listening that has any contacts, you just let me know. But Flo thinks she might be able to know someone that knows someone that has a ticket. So we'll see.
Oh, no doubt. That can be our Instagram appeal.
Exactly. Oh, maybe it can.
Get Bonds to Wembley.
But also, this game is going to be the first game that VAR and goal line technology are used within the competition history. So I guess it's quite a historic day. Well, it will be next week.
Yeah, amazing. So cool.
Perfect.
Cool. Love it. Right, let's get Sharon Martin on and let's get Ruth on. I hope that you guys love this conversation as much as we did.
Okay, right. To ease in. So you've got the aux cable, pre-comp. What are you listening to? Like, for shooting, do you need pump-up music? Do you need chill music? We actually have no idea.
So this is a good question. I think it depends on everyone individually. So my playlist is honestly a bit of everything. I like to have a bit of music in there that's like, you know, pumping me up, getting me ready. But at the same time, I don't want to get too overexcited. So I'll have some chill ones in there just to keep me a bit relaxed vibe.
Nice. Okay, yeah. What's like your go-to chill music then?
Oh, okay. So like my family are originally from Africa, so I'm really into Afrobeats. So I'm into like both energetic Afrobeats, but also like chilled music from African artists. So yeah, if you were to listen to my like pre-competition playlist, it's mainly African artists probably.
Class, that's so cool. I love it. Yeah. Okay, right. So getting into shooting then. Forgive our naivety. We've done our research, but can't really tell you much about your sport yet. So we're super excited for you to like unfold it and unpack it really. But what does firstly your training entail? Like what does a typical training week look like for you?
So yeah, so there's like different elements. So obviously there's like the typical range training, which when I speak to people, the first question they always ask is how do you train for shooting? Because I guess it's one of those sports where like people are like, do you just turn up to the range and shoot? But there's so many different elements that people don't think about. It's such a technical sport. So for example, something as simple as like how hard you're pulling the trigger, like there's ways to train that because you don't want to like snatch it. You don't want to like do it too softly. Like there's ways of like how much pressure you're putting on the trigger. So doing like training drills that focus around that, or there might be training drills that focus around your sight picture. So what exactly you're seeing when you look through the sight. So when you break down, I guess, every element of like the sport technically, there are training drills that you work on. So for me, I'll like at the beginning of the week, pick out what technical drill I want to work on. And then when I go to the range, I'll work on that. So I usually do that 2 times during the working week. And then on the weekend, there's usually either a training camp or a competition. And then I'll also do about 4 physical sessions throughout the week as well.
Amazing. So do you have pistol, shotgun, rifle?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And how did you decide what one you specialized in, or do you do a bit of everything?
No. So when I first like discovered shooting, I was in the army cadets at school. Completely different style of shooting as to what like is in the Olympics. It's and also back then it was something that when I was in the army cadets, they'd take us on like these fun camps and we'd do loads of different activities, and shooting was like one of the things we'd get to try out. So that's how I discovered it. But the type of shooting that they let us try out was actually rifle shooting. So that's how I, you know, got into the route of rifle. But then yeah, obviously there is pistol and shotgun as well. A lot of people get into shotgun because they're like from the countryside and it's something that their families have done. And then pistol, again, usually it's either families or they've been in the scouts or something like that.
Right. So I've got a military background, Royal Air Force. And we do rifles and pistols because of police.
Yeah.
Pistols.
Yep.
Terrible at this. You probably shouldn't say this live. Scrape a pass. Yep. Rifles. Mm-hmm. Love a rifle.
Yeah.
Good. I can see how you've got into this sport because like I love going to the ranges. I find it almost addictive and a bit like therapeutic.
Yes.
You have to relax yourself right down.
Yeah, you really do.
All you think about is your breathing and what you're aiming for. I can really see how you've like got the bug for it.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. And it is it's definitely like that. Like it's one of those things where like I don't know what it is about it, but like even most people that I've spoken to who've, you know, not from a competitive shooting background, but just, you know, have tried it, they're always like, okay, that was really good. I want to come back. There's just something about it that makes you want to do it again.
That's amazing. And I love that you went to Army Cadets, you got the opportunity to try shooting, and now you're competing at such a high level. And it's next week you're off to the World Champs?
Yeah, at World Cup tomorrow.
Oh, we're out tomorrow.
Yeah,
oh,
fly out tomorrow. Yeah.
Cool. Well, can you tell us about how the competition format works and what the next week will look like for you at the World Cup?
Yeah, so usually, because it's like a World Cup, there'll be loads of different events going on. So for this one, it's a World Cup in rifle and pistol. And then within those disciplines, there are other like sub-disciplines as well. So there's different types of rifles, different types of pistols. So in a competition like this, throughout the week, each day, there'll be a different event going on. The competition format for 10 meter air rifle, which is what I'm going out there for, a match is 60 shots and you have 1 hour and 15 minutes to shoot 60 shots in your own time. The top eight people then qualify for a final, and the final is basically, it's like an elimination format. So based on how you shoot, people get eliminated until the top two people get gold and bronze, basically. So at the moment, there's a gold medal match for the top two people. So you basically battle it out to win that gold medal. But the format is changing as of tomorrow, I think. So yeah, we'll have a new format. But yeah, so basically that's the brief summary of a competition format for 10 meter air rifle. But when it comes to a competition like the World Cup, so this will be my first World Cup, but basically I'll fly out tomorrow. I'll have a few days of like getting used to the new environment and you know, I guess just acclimatizing myself. My actual competition day isn't until Friday, but I'll have some training in between to get used to the range and see how it is.
And is your training one-to-one with you and a coach, or is there a couple of you that do the same discipline that gets coached, or is it all very much self-led?
Yeah, a lot of it is self-led. So for me, for example, the training that I do throughout the week, there's not really many people that shoot that live in like my area. So a lot of it, I'll just turn up to the range and I'll speak to my coach beforehand, maybe about what I'm going to do, and then give them a summary afterwards and how it went. The weekends when we have training camps, or like if we have a week long training camp, that's when you'll get your one-to-one support, because that's when everyone comes together in wherever we're training. And then we've got all the coaches there as well.
Cool. And throwing it back a little bit, but previously you were juggling working night shifts, studying for a PhD in infectious diseases, and also managing to train and compete at the elite level. So unfortunately, that's a story that we hear all too often in women's sport.
Yeah.
But can you tell us basically how you managed to do all that? Because that's crazy.
Yeah, it was tough. So I was doing all of those things, and I think the thing which was making it even more difficult for me was the work that I was doing was night shift. I was like wiped out. I was studying all day throughout the day. I'd usually have a strength and conditioning session as well. And then I'd get maybe a couple of hours sleep, and then I'd be off to work at midnight until 8 a.m. And it was horrendous. So I did that for 2 years. And then I was like, no, this is too much. Something's got to stop. It was fine balancing it. But I think the thing that was, you know, really suffering was like mentally. I was like, this is too much. There's a lot going on. So I made the decision to cut my PhD short. And in the end, the 2 years that I'd done, I was able to graduate with a postgraduate certificate. And at the time, I think for me, that was the best decision, because shooting was going so well and it still is. And I was like, I'm not going to be an elite athlete forever. Whereas I can always go back to university. So yeah, the best decision for me at that point was to stop uni and just do the work and shooting. So now I'm in a job which is a lot better time-wise. But yeah, it can be a challenge. And it's a challenge that I guess a lot of athletes, like especially female athletes, are facing, is where they're having to work alongside their sport as well.
Massively. What is funding like in shooting? Is it all through UK Sport?
Yeah, so it's UK Sport and lottery funding, but it's so we only see, I guess, the benefits of it. I don't know what that means, but I guess we only get access to that when you're on the Olympic pathway.
Okay.
So with our pathway, we kind of had like a reshuffle a few years ago. So we have a development academy, a talent academy, and then the world-class program, which is the national academy and podium potential, all of that. So it is a bit of a tiered system. And yeah, I guess the higher up the tier you get, as expected, the more access you get to different support services and things like that. So last year I was on the talent academy, but in the autumn, got bumped up to the Olympic program. So this year it's been great for me because I now have access to like strength and conditioning and physio, sports psych, all of that stuff, which you don't necessarily get if you're lower down on the pathway. But I guess that is due to funding and things like that. I definitely feel as though shooting, amongst a lot of other sports in the UK, don't get obviously as much funding as some of the bigger ones out there. So
you mentioned you've got access to sports psych. Now I feel like this must be huge in shooting when you've got what, 60 rounds in an hour to hit. You need to calm yourself. What techniques have you used, and is it something that you tap into, or do you find that you can manage it yourself quite well?
I think it's a bit of both. So I've definitely really benefited from sports psychology. I think probably a lot of shooters do, just because, you know, shooting is one of those sports where once you've got the technical skills down, it is completely a mental game then. And like, it's so easy to get in your own head, especially because it's such an individualized sport. Yes, there might be 80 people along the firing line, but at the end of the day, nothing matters apart from you and your target and what you're doing. So yeah, it's tough. I feel as though I've developed a lot of skills and where if things are going wrong, I know how to bring myself back into the moment. But then there are also a lot of skills that like I've learned from sports psychs that have definitely helped me. For me, one of the big things I love to do before a match is imagery and just kind of like play a match out in my head and go through different scenarios so that, you know, if it's going wrong, what would I do in that situation? So that when it comes to the actual day, I feel as though nothing can kind of throw me off because I've already played it in my head, you know, all the different scenarios beforehand.
How do you bring yourself back if it is going wrong?
I think it's a skill because not a lot of people can do it. And it's very easy as well to, if you have a really bad shot, to then just let it spiral and like, you know, not the next one will be bad and then next one will be bad and it just, you can't bring it back after that. But for me, what I do personally is a lot of self-talk, and like, it's really important for me to remember and like to tell myself, like, you can't do anything about that now. So there's no point in, you know, dwelling on it. All you can do is focus on the next shot and the next one after that. But that's a skill that I've kind of like worked on, is being able to not let myself get affected by one bad shot and to just scrap it, put it out of my mind and completely reset and focus on the next one after that. But it is a tough one and it's not one that everyone can do or everyone has mastered yet. But it's definitely important to me to just like not freak out, talk to myself and let myself know that one bad shot doesn't necessarily have to ruin the whole match.
And I think that is good advice for anybody in any sport.
Yeah.
We always talk about when we're reviewing our games, like you always remember the bad bits.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's having that next job mentality.
Definitely.
And with that there, you mentioned being on the Olympic program now. So how does Olympic qualifiers work for you?
So with us, and I don't know how it works in like other sports in comparison, but for us, so in the lead up to an Olympics, the International Shooting Sports Federation will produce a list of competitions in which you can win like a quota place for your country. So quota places are like given out depending on like where you, I think you can only win them in a final, but like where you place basically. And yeah, so our aim as athletes on the Olympic program is to try and get selected by British Shooting to go to those competitions so that we can then essentially fight for a quota place. So yes, I guess it all starts like here domestically, because if we don't go to those comps, then there's no chance of us winning a place. So it starts based on British Shooting will release a minimum consideration score that we need to hit to be considered to be selected for those comps. Once you've hit the score twice, they will then, you'll be eligible to go to those competitions. And then you can win, I think each country can win a maximum of two quota places per event. And so typically how it works is the person who wins the quota place gets to go to the Olympics, but technically you don't win the quota place for yourself, you win it for your country. So you might win the quota place and then by the time the Olympics comes around, someone else in the UK might be shooting a lot better than you, and British Shooting can turn around and be like, I'm going to send those to the Olympics instead of you. So it is a bit of a, you know, a dog eat dog world. You know, like I say, typically the person who wins the quota place is usually doing the best at the time anyway, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee that they'll be the person that gets to go. And it has been known, in fact, it happens all the time within different countries. People will win the place, but someone else will go. It can be a tough one.
That's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Whereas I think, like, there are some sports, like I think athletics, I'm pretty sure their places for who goes to the Olympics are based on like how they do in their national champs, their British championship. So I think if you finish top three in whatever your event is, you can get to go, which I would love it if it was like that for shooting. But yeah, it's not. It's a completely different system.
Like, you're not able to celebrate, oh my gosh, I'm going to the Olympics, until you're on the plane.
Pretty much, yeah.
Crazy.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about was basically like when we're like traveling through the airport and stuff as teams, we always get like, oh, are you girls hockey players? Like, are you netballers?
Right.
But so what do people react to you when you say that you do shooting? Because I don't imagine that that's the sport that's like comes to people's mind.
Yeah. And I think so it's a bit of a weird one because, yes, a lot of people just aren't expecting it. It's such a unique niche sport. Also, a lot of people don't actually know that it's a sport, let alone an Olympic sport. So I think people are a bit like, what? What's that? They definitely want to know more. Yeah, exactly. They want to know more about it. But a lot of the time, people are just excited to know more. So they're like, tell me more about it. What do you do? Like, what does it entail? And I think me, amongst probably most of the people on the team, are always excited to educate people about it and let them know what it is, because it is one of those sports that is a bit, you know, it's less known and it's not televised as much as other sports and things like that. So I think any opportunity we have to let people know, we're always there for it.
What sort of things do you think we can do in shooting to get more young people and more diversity of people involved in the sport? Like, I know you're sponsored by Lacoste, which I think is so cool, and like campaigns like that will go a long way. But I guess for you at the domestic level, what do you think we can do to increase diversity?
I think, so for me, I've always said that I think the biggest kind of thing we can do is probably go out to schools. So at the moment, I'm in the process of like contacting different schools and trying to get out there and like just let people know about the sport. And obviously it's not only about, you know, getting young people involved in the sport, because shooting is one of those sports where you can be in your 60s and still be going to the Olympics. You know what I mean? As long as you still want to, I guess, and still have the drive. It's not a sport where there's typically a retirement age. So yes, I think schools is a big opportunity because there are so many people you can reach out to. But I also think it's important to be able to go out to organizations as well, of like working people, and let them know about the sport as well. So yeah, I think like at the moment, that's probably one of the biggest things that we can do as a British shooting community, is just go out there and speak to everyone and anyone that we can and let them know about it.
I think it's so cool, like what you've said there, that actually, yeah, it is a sport that you can compete at any age, because we've discussed like people not being active when they're older and stuff, whereas actually there are sports where you can compete. It's just connecting people with the sport.
Yeah, definitely.
And like, what do you find the biggest barrier? Like, is it age, gender, race? What would you say? Or all of them in equal amounts? Or it's just the fact that folk don't really know about the sport?
I think there's lots of different barriers. I think the fact that people don't know about it is one of the biggest ones, especially because like on British Shooting, on their website, you can go on like find a club near you, and there are clubs everywhere all over the UK. So it's not even a case of like, oh, there are only clubs like, you know, here, there and wherever. They are everywhere. So I think, but a lot of people don't know that. I think people just assume that like if they haven't heard that there's a shooting club around them, then there probably isn't one, whereas there's probably one around the corner from them. I also think that there's like a perception about shooting being this like, you know, high class, very expensive sport. And it is an expensive sport. It's definitely not the cheapest sport, but I think people automatically get put off by the fact that it is an expensive sport. They don't know that there are so many different ways around that, I guess. So the majority of shooting clubs in the UK, when you join as a member, they'll have club equipment that you can use. So even though shooting equipment is very expensive, it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't start the sport because you don't have the money to buy the equipment, because like I say, most shooting clubs will actually have equipment for you to use. So it's just things like that, like making sure that people know that you don't have to be the richest person in the world to start this sport. You know, you can go to the club and they'll probably give you what you need.
That is huge for accessibility within the sport, because shooting does have this perception that
definitely
it's like rich old men, whereas you've proven that it's not at all the case. I love the thought that like you could go to the Olympics and in the British team, the diversity must be all over the place, because I know that with us, when the new 18, 19 year olds come into the team,
right,
we're like, oh, like the babies, whereas in shooting the age range must be crazy.
Yeah, it is, it really is. Which is great. It really is great. And it's like, it's so, even when we're on like training camps together, obviously that's like the one time of the month where everyone comes together for the camp. And it's just, even being in those situations, like it's so great to be around people of like so many different ages, and everyone's got different stories as well. And it's just like, it is really cool. We love that.
With British Shooting, you spearheaded a campaign called Target Change, and that was aimed at bringing more people into the sport. So can you tell us a little bit about that campaign?
Yeah, so I must have come up with the idea during lockdown, I think. So it was at a time when the Black Lives Matter movement was like everywhere. And for me, it was like, it was really important that I did something, because I've been shooting competitively now for, this is my fifth year. And so I think just, you know, it's something that I've obviously noticed, was the fact that, you know, I was the only one that looked like me. Still 5 years later, I am. And it's just crazy to me that we live in such a diverse country, and that is still something that we're seeing in shooting. And it wasn't something that I saw as like an issue or a problem, but it was something that I was like, why can't we do something to change that? You know, like, why don't we make it more diverse? So I brought it to the attention of British Shooting, and I was like, listen, I really feel as though we should do something to try and change this. And it was really coincidental that at the time that I contacted them, British Shooting were kind of brainstorming about ideas for the same kind of thing. They wanted to diversify the sport as much as they could. So we kind of just linked up in that way. I told them that I felt as though we should launch some sort of campaign, but I really wanted to kind of find a powerful way to launch it. So for me, I've always been into like creative writing and things like that. And I told them like, I want to write a poem about it and use that as the launch for the initiative, which they got on board for. So I wrote the poem and we eventually filmed it. It took a while though, because I wrote it, but we didn't film it until like, I think a year and a half, 2 years later. Wow. So yeah, it was a while. It was a long time in the making, but we got there. And obviously we had like so much success and from it, so many people were interested in it. We ended up taking it to a few schools, had like have a go days, and people were coming out and trying it. For me, I loved hearing like the feedback from those days, because I had a few people that were saying that they came along because they'd seen the video that I'd put out. And I was just like, that's so powerful. I think you hope that that's the case, is that the video will inspire people. But then to actually hear people being like, oh yeah, I saw Ruth on the video and it made me want to come and try it, I was like, wow, okay, so it's done what we had hoped it would do. So yeah, it was just really important for me to do that. And I think I was worried that people would see the campaign and be like, why is she trying to change, you know, something like this? But it never had the aim of being a negative thing or bringing any negativity to the sport. It was always a case of, you know, there's nothing negative about, you know, bringing more people into the sport from different backgrounds. So yeah,
no, the video's amazing. I watched it last night with my housemates, and Bryony was like, this is cool, she's cool, she's making shooting cool.
Yeah.
And Bryony never gives away compliments, but she was loving the video.
I love that.
Well, see if we can try share it to a page, because it is actually like, the poems are amazing. I didn't realize that you'd actually wrote it.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, it is incredible. And I think when we talk about like getting more people into sport, if you can see somebody that looks like you and that you can relate to, mm-hmm. if that's because you're a black shooter, if it's because you're a young female shooting, like that is so powerful. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's incredible that lockdown project has had such a lasting impact.
Definitely.
In shooting.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so just final couple of things left. We ask every one of our guests what success means to them. And just to finish the sentence, so success means to you?
Success means to me knowing that I have done my best, the best that I can do. I think for a lot of people, success might be winning a certain medal or making it to an Olympics or making it to XYZ competition. But for me, it's not all about that. Like, I feel as though I was put in this sport for so much more than just medals and winning. For me, success is knowing that I've done the best that I can do. I can't do any better than that. If I am getting a medal out of it or making an Olympic team out of it, like, that's a bonus for me. Success is also, you know, inspiring the next generation of shooters. Even just having one person coming up to me being like, I started the sport because of you, to me, that's success. I can't do much more than that. And that's what I've set out to do.
Oh, I love it.
I love it. That's probably one of my favorite answers.
Yeah. Okay, cool. No, thank you so much. So last little bit. So we've got five quick fire questions for you. So we call it this or that, just so that listeners can get to know a little bit more about you.
Okay.
So first question, tea or coffee?
Tea.
Android or iPhone?
Android.
Conditioning or weight session? Is that relevant for shooting?
Yeah, I'd say weight.
Okay.
Wait. Yep.
Night in or night out?
Night in.
Night in. You're a scout, surely.
I know. I know. Night in. Night in. I'm getting too old now.
So then, final question: Aquarius or Libra?
Oh, let's go Aquarius.
Bonner is an Aquarius.
Basically, everyone's like star signs, and we're like, that's us.
I love that.
No, thank you so much for coming on. That was such a cool conversation. It was so cool to find out so much more about shooting. And yeah, we wish you all the success for the next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Anything you believe you can be.